The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Day 30 at the World Cup and its destination denouement. With Spain and Holland now just hours away from their game of destiny, the pod arrives at the big standoff armed with a chicken and a can of lager to break things down for you. The big questions. Does tiki-taka really exist, or did Sid get confused with the Spanish breath mint? And does the break-in at Busquets' hotel room show Spain have trouble stopping Robin? Definitive tactical analysis coming up. Plus, the game Platini pulled a sickie to get out of the third-fourth playoff, and how it showed the rest of the tournament up. Scott Murray reports on Uruguay-Germany, blow by glorious blow. This post and other almost at the end of the cup business in World Cup Daily. Hi, world. On board today, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Tom Lutz should be here. Hello, by the way, Jacob. Tom Lutz should be here, but isn't. Any second now, we're thinking. And meantime, Heretical Thinking's Scott Murray. Scott, just before we light the faggots arranged underneath your steak, care to recant your thoughts on Spain? On Spain.
What the...
Yes.
Not the most...
Our last pod.
Right, okay. Well, what's happened here?
Well, our last pod...
Right. I can remember that. I remember what I said. But
You called Spain dull.
Did I?
Yeah,
did I?
And John Ashton went along with you.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, I don't think they have been that entertaining. They're clearly a very, very good side. They've got much more that they can do. Hopefully they'll do that later on today. Right. But they've not been that entertaining. And I just wonder whether it's one of these things that, I'm not sure what's been said on the
depends podcast. What you call entertaining, I suppose, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
see, somebody, I mean, and I wish it had been me, compared Spain and their business, you know, technically perfectly right. Diseased, to have, you know, to being made love to by Sting.
My word.
And I think we know what they mean, really.
Yeah. That's really thrown me.
Shall we leave
now.
It with that for a second? We'll come back
yes,
to
please.
This with the Spain business later on. But, Scott, I have to say, I know what you mean, and I know what they mean as well. And it must be dreadfully upsetting if you've been waiting for a proper football team to play proper football and succeed while doing it when you think, oh, other people aren't appreciating it. It's not that they're not appreciating it. It's just you really want to see a game like the Uruguay-Germany.
I mean, I guess, yeah, but exactly. But this is what brings me back. If I were to sit and appreciate something, I'd probably put on some quite difficult jazz.
Right.
This isn't the reason that I personally watch football. And, of course, I would much rather a team like, Spain tiki-taka it around and create 17 chances per game. But they're not doing that.
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily then follow that I want them to be managed by Bobby Gould.
Yeah, fair point. They had 90% possession. They won it 1-0 thanks to a set piece. Possibly a slight exaggeration with the statistics there. Jacob, did you want to weigh in with that?
Well, I think, you know, that I do agree with Scott, because at the beginning of the at the tournament, you know, it's really, really awful games. And I think Spain were the last team to play in the first round of games. And we all thought, great, they're going to play. They're going to batter Switzerland. And then they lost. And even when they lost, they were still a bit dull. And it is very good what they do, because no one else can pass it for, you know, 90 minutes of the match and not let the other team have a sniff. I think they're Barcelona without Messi.
Hmm. Well, Sid, possibly, I think it was, who made the excellent point for once that they probably made a rod for their own backs with that, what was it, 6-2 or something against Poland?
6-0. 6-0. Yeah, and the goal against the silver goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's the one. Mm. Anyway, listen, still no Tom Lutz, listeners, if you logged on specifically for it. Oh!
Hey!
Thanks for making it, Tom.
Hey.
What kept you?
I had to cover the third place playoff match report.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, shall we talk about said third, fourth playoff? Happy Goth says, to borrow a John Ash and Ashdown analogy, tonight is the mosh pit, tomorrow's the opera, referring to the final. And what an exciting mosh pit it was. Scott, you were doing minute by minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fantastic game. And I know that there's a lot of... there's a lot of pressure off on the third and fourth place. But it was just good to see two teams going at it. And it was also, I mean, we've been racking our brains, and I think this is true, that that's the first time that the leads changed hands once in a game, never mind twice. And I'm just wondering...
In 63
matches. In 63
matches,
you know, that's the one thing. It hasn't been a bad World Cup by any stretch of the imagination. But I think the one thing it has missed, there haven't been any roller coasters. There's been, you know, a few dramatic games.
No, in terms of that kind of drama, it's been quite lacking. It's had lots of colour. It's had lots of, I mean, it's all sorts of interesting themes to it.
Was that to do with the defensive tactics? As soon as you score a goal, you just close up shop?
Possibly. Was it? I don't know.
So USA Slovenia was approaching a roller coaster.
And Italy Slovakia had a lot of drama just too. But you didn't see the lead change hands.
Rather than a roller coaster, I would suggest.
Okay. Mild stomach upsets. But one thing
okay,
I know,
which fairground ride were England then?
the
Big Dipper?
No, that's good.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Maybe when the bear, you know, they've got those men in bear costumes.
House of Horrors?
Yeah, they just come and embrace you and you're like, can they scare you?
That's the House of Horrors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or some sort of waxworks, I'm not sure.
What's that thing that spins around and goes...
Teacups.
Oh, teacups. Teacups, and you feel violently
sick. You just feel ill,
Right.
Uruguay actually looked bothered that they lost that game at the end. I was going through the pictures for the front pages, and like at the end, a few of them were on their knees, so that was quite surprising to see how much it mattered to
them.
But
Germany
as well.
Didn't care, did they?
No, we were trying to get celebration pictures of Germany, and they even when they had their arms around each other, they just looked like they were commiserating with each other.
Oh, no.
That's terrible. Ironic, isn't it? Is that ironic?
I don't know what ironic is anymore.
It might be anyway.
Maybe a paradox?
No, it's not a paradox. I'm going with irony.
Yeah.
Tell you what, third, fourth game is not a game that you want to be in. I mean, obviously it's not, but in four of the last six World Cups, one of the two teams from the third, fourth playoff has then failed to make the next tournament. You think, you know, this is third and fourth. But look, 1986, France and Belgium. France, who finished third, didn't qualify for the next one. 1990, Italy and England. England didn't qualify for USA 94. 1994, Sweden were third, Bulgaria fourth. Sweden didn't qualify for the next one. 2002, Turkey and South Korea. Turkey did not qualify for Germany. 2006, which of the two teams tonight would you put your fiver on for not making it to the next one? It's Germany, isn't it, Scott?
Wouldn't that be a story?
But Uruguay, I mean, they're a young team, aren't they? I'm sure I heard that.
Yeah, not as young as Germany, though.
That's true. But they look a promising team, Jacob.
They do look like a promising team.
Excellent. How about that Diego Forlan, huh?
Yeah, fantastic. And at the end of the game, there was that, you know, sort of beautiful, bittersweet moment where he clipped the crossbar with his free kick, which would have taken it extra time, would have given him a shout with the golden boot. And his reaction was fantastic as well. I mean, Tom was saying earlier that they looked gutted. He had this sort of a slightly resigned look and then a wry smile. And he's just been fantastic throughout the tournament, really.
Is he the most likable man at the World Cup?
I think he has been,
but it was strange. The commentator was saying, what a weird sensation to be feeling some love for Diego Forlan. I have nothing but love in my heart.
Yeah, but that was Peter Drury. So
it was actually the Charles. It was Adrian Charles.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe he has some agenda with him. I don't know if he did something to West Brom.
You see, he went big on the Ghana-Uruguay game. Charles said a nervous
breakdown. Yeah, but that was a Suarez
thing, didn't he? Yeah, but he's got himself all confused.
I don't know. Very, very possibly.
Do you think people will lay off him now?
Who?
For failing at United.
Because he did, didn't he? That's extraordinary. He went to Manchester United and he didn't play as well. He's come on a long way.
People still... I know I've just mentioned it, but I'm not saying it like that.
Right. Anyway, in your minute by minute, Mike Birtwistle, which I was kind of actually sneakily looking through, said, could Forlan win World Player of the Year? He's led his nation through the World Cup. He's there at the top of the Golden Boot standings. Because he's level, isn't he, with Mullen, Schneider and Villa. Of course, Schneider and Villa could add to that in the final. And he's also won the Europa League.
I mean, it would be a great show.
Wouldn't it be good?
I mean, the problem with people that vote for hand out these prizes, they never seem to like work out any sort of relatives in it. In as much as the winning the Europa League, getting Uruguay to semi-final is probably as good an achievement as if, say, Holland win the World Cup tomorrow. Schneider would have won the Champions League and the World Cup. Mm. But he's with a country expected to do well at the World Cup and one of the biggest club sides in Europe.
Yep. No, absolutely fair. Germany, anyway, finishing top three for the third World Cup in a row. And it's a European 1-2-3.
It's quite interesting after the last six... Well, after the group stages, everybody's like, oh, the rise of South America. And now all of a sudden it's not. So all those reasons and thousands of words people wrote about why South America was brilliant there just turned out to be rubbish.
But that's the beauty of football, isn't it, Tom?
Yes,
it
possibly.
Is such a fluid thing.
Yes.
Good. We mentioned the Golden Ball player of the tournament. Diego Forlan of Uruguay is in the running along with, this is the FIFA list, official list, David Villa of Spain, Andres Iniesta of Spain, Xavi Hernandez of Spain, Lionel Messi of Argentina, Mesut Özil of Germany, Bastian Schweinsteiger of Germany, Asamoah Gyan of Ghana, and Arjen Robben of Holland, and of course Wesley Sneijder.
Why is Messi on that list?
Because it's not all about goals, as Jonathan Wilson has observed before.
But, well, what is it about then? He did absolutely nothing.
Well, I think that's a bit harsh.
He did nothing.
He just had one bad game.
Can we have some more faggots for Scott's steak over here?
Right.
He was fine in the group stages. He was fine.
And against Mexico.
It was more than fine. He played delightfully.
Yes.
I wasn't wholly impressed. But you know, again, maybe I'm just...
You want some end product.
Expecting good players to maybe score some goals in the World Cup and not be like the main man in a team that loses the biggest game 4-0. And also, he is clearly the best player in the world.
Hmm.
So he should be judged by those standards.
Are you saying that if he wasn't small and, let's be frank, a little bit cute and cuddly, we wouldn't be cutting him so much slack? Do we all basically...
If he looked like Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
If, you know, well, I'm sure Wayne Rooney likes a cuddle as well, you know.
No, I'm sure he does. But with Messi, he is just kind of, you know, he's a bit of a cartoon, isn't he?
I guess so.
I think we all like Messi, so he's all
he's
right.
A nice sort of, you know... He's,
if
he's
it was Ribéry, for example,
yeah,
we'd be on that man's case.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have a very good World Cup.
No, he didn't, and he's not on that list.
I'd actually forgotten he played at the World Cup when you said Ribéry.
Mm.
Do you see the name missing from the list, by the way?
Steven Gerrard.
Thomas Müller.
Oh, yeah.
And he is now the youngest player since Pelé to score 5 goals at a World Cup.
Had a boy FIFA. Ah. He's on the young 21. Player list, though.
Yeah, but he should be on the main stage, shouldn't he? It's been brilliant.
And tonight proved it again.
World Cup Daily from The Guardian with James Richardson.
In other news, John Ashdown, who you recall is bravely trying to amass followers without ever tweeting, has now got 524 people to sign up for him. There you go, at John_Ashdown, I think, isn't it? To put that in perspective, Ben Green, our producer, has got 232. Jacob, you got 867. I, myself, count 4,638 peeps. But I am the forerunner of another who comes after me, who is Barry Glendenning, with almost twice that figure. And Sid Lowe's the big daddy, with 10,000 people and 71. He tweets a lot, Sid, have you noticed? In Spanish and English as well.
So he's cheating in a way.
Well, I suppose he is, actually, yeah. Anyway, listeners, sorry to waste so much of your time with this nonsense. Let's move on, then, to the big deal which is happening Sunday night at Soccer City, Holland, Spain. So much to say about this game. So much has already been said about this game. How about this? Spain have completed more passes than any other side. We all knew that. 3,387 passes. The next best team, the Netherlands, with two-thirds of that, 2,434. Interesting. And they've got all the top four passes in the tournament. They all play for Spain. They like to pass. This just in, Spain like to pass. Erle Brigand. Posts in, and he says, have Spain and Holland, have they between them scored the fewest goals in getting to the final of any pair of World Cup finalists?
Well, Spain have to score, four tomorrow to become equal lowest scoring?
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So even if they score four tomorrow, they'll be the lowest scoring World Cup winners ever.
Who are the lowest?
England, Brazil in 2002. England, obviously, in 66, and then I can't remember who the other one is. But then they played fewer games in the early World
Cup. Oh, that's true. Yeah, fair shout. Jacob, you've got a fact, haven't you?
Yes.
Is now the time, or do you want to save it up for later?
It could be the time.
All right.
Do we think it's the time?
Yeah.
This could make your career.
Jacob's fact.
Well, just on Mark van Bommel, who I imagine we might... who's been spoken about a lot this week for his... Foul play.
Yeah.
I was watching a clip of him on YouTube. I don't know if you remember Barcelona thumping Bayern Munich in the Champions League last year, and the elbow on Messi for Barcelona's fourth goal that Van Bommel did, which didn't get noticed, and it poleaxed Messi. He was flat out on the floor, but Barcelona went on and scored, so which is why it wasn't spotted.
It's a great clip because he goes over and stands over Messi and says, "Are you right?"
And they played together. They would have played together because he was at Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. You'll never guess who the referee was.
Howard Webb.
It was Howard Webb.
Howard Webb.
Yeah.
All right.
I was watching with Greg Ruffley, and we've sort of... I tell you what,
Sid's on the line, we hope, a little bit later on. So let's mention that to him. And there's some very exciting Van Bommel news, which posted in earlier. But before we get to any of that, a little bit earlier, producer Ben dreamed up a new Netherlands correspondent, Rutger Schluchter, who's a TV reporter on there at De Visie with Dutch television, who we spoke to at Schiphol Airport. He was quite literally getting on the last plane with the last seat to get, you know, to Soccer City to see the game. And he's going to fly, I think, straight. He's just going on a 22-hour round trip, see the game and come straight home again. Lord knows what happens if it goes to extra time. That'd probably screw the entire arrangement up. Anyway, let's now hear what Rutger had to say.
I'm actually going as a fan. I'm not going as a journalist, because I just realized that, you know, World Cup final with Holland in it is only, you know, happening every 32 years probably. And I have to be there, because in 32 years I'm probably going to be too old or dead. So this is my one shot, and I just wanted to be there.
All right. Does everyone in Holland leave things very late? You're going out now on the eve of the game, and the Dutch team didn't bother booking any hotels. It seems a little bit relaxed.
Actually, if you would have asked me before the tournament if Holland would make the final, I would probably just laugh. Because nobody really expected this, except perhaps for the players and the coach. Because they've been confident for 2 years that they could do this. But everybody had, you know, a feeling that perhaps a couple of nice games and then go home, you know, before your postcards. Actually, it's the whole mood is switching. And now everybody believes that we can actually do it and win the final as well.
All right. So the mood is confident in Holland, is it? Because we've had some people on, and then other people have said that they were overconfident and it wasn't representative of the mood. The Dutch people are confident?
I've got a feeling that since we've made it this far, that everybody has got a feeling that, well, why not Spain? And also because, I mean, Spain played really well against Germany, but scored only once. And there's a real feeling that we can score in every game. And sometimes, perhaps, it's a bit lucky, you know, with an own goal or, you know, deflected shots or whatever. But still, I mean, they scored every game. Even, you know, looking at how well Spain played, they only scored once. So, you know, we're in there with a shot, I think.
Tell me, do you think Spain are boring?
No, they're not boring. They're just not scoring. The only one who's scoring is David Villa, and they had some excellent attacks against Germany, and the one goal comes from a defender, from a set piece. So, you know, it's not like they beat Germany up 4-0 or anything, and if Germany still had chances in the last second to pull one back, so... Why not Holland?
Why not indeed? You say only Villa scoring for Spain. Of course, only Wesley Sneijder scoring for Holland, a slight exaggeration. But how about this business of him winning the triple in Italy, you know, the Serie A, the Italian Cup and the Champions League, and the World Cup in 1 year? Unprecedented.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. And, well, the guy deserves it. Played out of his skin for the last year. Madrid is regretting the fact that they let him go so easy. And if you look at the guys who they brought in at this World Cup, I think they made a big mistake there.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's the big hero of this Dutch side in the Netherlands?
Well, depending on who you ask, I think if you ask most people from Rotterdam, for example, where Feyenoord played, they will always say Dirk Kuyt, because he played in Feyenoord and he's got the same, you know, characteristics as that team. Most other Dutchmen would say Arjen Robben.
What about Van Bommel?
Van Bommel, In Holland, the feeling is that he's playing really well. I know that everybody abroad wants to shoot him, but every team needs to play like that, I think.
Right.
And I saw a lot of discussions in the foreign media that he is cynical or dirty or whatever. But if you look at the great teams of the past, every team has one. I mean, 4 years ago, next to the player of the tournament, Cannavaro, Materazzi was playing. And you're not telling me that he was the most, you know, beautiful player ever to be on a pitch.
I hear what you're saying, Rutger, although I think Van Bommel's another level. Deep down, you're probably all collectively a bit ashamed of Van Bommel, no? Selling the image of orangey football?
No, not at all. Actually, I think most people in Holland think that he's playing well. And also, I mean, I've seen a lot of talk, you know, about the beautiful football Holland played in 74. Mm. Apparently, you know, foreigners have forgotten that Neeskens, I mean, he was a brilliant player, but he could also dish it out. Van Hanegem, Jansen, all those guys. If you look at 88, we won the title. We weren't playing that well. And we had, for example, Jan Wouters in midfield. And I probably don't have to remind you of the fact that he elbowed Gascoigne out of one game a couple of years later. Okay, but we still had that kind of player in the team that was successful.
It's part of Dutch tradition too. Excellent. Listen, one last thing, Rutger. We have one of our listeners, Stilton, who says he doesn't think Netherlands will park the bus against Spain. They're bringing the vans. And he makes another important point. He would love to see Dutch wingmen up against the Spanish fullbacks. He'd like to see Lambertus van Marijk sending out Robin and Elia to really go after the Spanish fullbacks. Any chance that'll happen?
No, that will never happen. For one thing, van Marijk doesn't like to change a lot of things. If you look at the squads he put out there these last six games, he only switched players because of substitutions or injury. But he will definitely keep the same team. The two guys coming back from suspension will play, and the other nine who played against Uruguay. Elia, don't get me wrong, I mean, yeah. I love the player, but in a World Cup final, perhaps he's a little bit too light to be in the first 11. Would be great if he came on the pitch in our last 15 minutes, if necessary, but he won't start.
Right, excellent. Rutger, listen, enjoy the flight. Let's hope you have a safe trip and that Ryan Babel isn't in the starting 11 when you land there in South Africa. And we'll wish you the very best.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rutger.
I hope you will enjoy the game.
There you go, eh? What do you reckon? Holland?
No.
Tom? No chance?
Not no chance, but...
I think they're going to do it, friend. I think
really?
They're going to beat them 1-0.
Why?
Because I think Aaron Robben, when he's not being kicked up in the air, which I don't think the Spanish, I know they have some form, I think that he is possibly the single most decisive player you could, of any that are, I mean, of certainly of the 22 who will be taking the field, I think he is the single most decisive in terms of just one play, one chance, bang, and it's in. I think he is the most capable person of turning a game with one shot, and I think he's going to do it.
I think Schneider as well has got a really good accuracy rate from distance. I think it's something like 60% of his shots from distance this World Cup have hit the target. So that might be one way they can get at Spain. We know that they haven't come from behind at this World Cup yet. So if you get there 1-0, and then it might be a different game.
Jacob? I agree with you, James. I think Robin's Robin's the key for, probably the best attacking player on the pitch when he's on form. I don't think that Snyder's going to be that important. I don't think he's really had that good a World Cup, and he should only have 3 goals as well, not 5. But if they can get it to Robin enough, if he can get a Cap de Vier and isolate him, then possibly. But it's hard to see.
It's
him
a tall order, isn't
it?
What about with Van Bommel? Because this is something that tactical people say. They say, "Oh, but Holland aren't going to make it easy for Spain in the same way that they're not going to be polite in the way that Germany." Were with Van Bommel and De Jong, they're going to get stuck in.
I think De Jong's return from suspension is quite important as well, because Van Bommel was kind of on his own as the hard man last time, and he's got De Jong to back him up as well. Van Bommel has played a lot of passes for Holland in this World Cup as well, so I think sometimes you'd forget that he's kind of distributor engine room in that way as well. He's not just going around fouling people stealthily.
Mwahahaha says, could this be the reason why Van Bommel collects even fewer bookings than AC Jimbo? Yeah, I have to say, my agent took a little bit of umbrage at that that gag. But anyway, some mind-numbing research, says Mwahahaha from American academics, has proven that referees are less likely to give a foul when the perpetrator is moving left to right in their field of vision, and more likely to give a foul when he's moving from the right. Having studied several minutes of footage of Van Bommel playing in South Africa, I can go further and claim that he's clearly aware of this phenomenon. phenomenon and can be seen time and again only trying to break the leg of his opponent when he's correctly positioned relative to the referee. It's to do with the way we read books, you see. People who read from left to right have an unconscious preference for motion in the same direction. That's why movie directors usually have the bad guy or shocking event entering from the right. It makes us uncomfortable.
Do you think that's true, or you just made that up?
No, it is. I don't know about... No, he may well be making up the bit about Van Bommel moves in that direction. It is true, though, that events that happen from right to left, when a cat leaps from the cupboard in Halloween or whatever, they'll do it in that direction. Producer Ben's being clever and he's saying, what about in Arabic cinema culture? Well, obviously, then you'd have to go the other way. But Howard Webb's an English referee and thus will be... showing an unconscious preference for left-to-right action. So I'm sure Van Bommel was more than aware of that. I thought that was pretty astounding and mind-broadening information there from Wahahaho. I don't believe I've ever seen posting before, but very interesting stuff, Scott.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. Holland or Spain? Yeah, sorry, Tom.
I was just asking what you thought of Arabic cinema.
Yeah, but we haven't got all evening, though, have we? Yeah.
No. That's the thing. That is so very much
yeah.
the case.
Holland, yeah, Holland. Because I'm not sure Casillas has had that great a World Cup, actually. So if there's a few shots riding in, as Tommy Lutz reckons might be the case, then you just never know. Also, I just wondered, like, the one thing, Xabi Alonso is a fantastic player. Occasionally, if he's not on his right on his game, his tackling can be a bit up and down. So maybe if he's got people like putting it around him, he might lose the plot a wee bit there as well. Also, I just think Holland they've sort of been painted as these sort of clumping idiots, and it's preposterous. They've been reasonably free scoring. They've beat Brazil. They scored three in the semi-finals. They scored, a couple in the second round. And they do have players up front. I think they're sort of painted as being, 11 Dirk Kuyt, who is also a very good player.
Yep.
He tries.
He certainly does.
He's a nice man.
Yeah, and Van Persie, if they could get Van Persie into the game,
Yeah, but, it is one of those games that if Spain could end up 4-0. But I just fancy Holland for this.
So out of four people around this table, three think Holland...
Well, it's when Scott says clumping idiots, because any clash between artists and clumping idiots is going to go to the clumping idiots. That's the way the world works. So, you convinced me there.
Yeah. I think as well, Holland showed the benefit of being lucky at a tournament, because if you look at some of the goals they've scored in virtually every game, they're ridiculous own goals in a couple of the group games, Brazil.
Denmark,
yeah, and the deflection the other night against Uruguay when they were struggling a little bit to find the goal. And even they could have played Italy in the second round, which I know might not be at the moment the toughest game, but instead they played Slovakia. It sort of opened up for them a little bit, didn't it?
It did indeed.
And I think as well, the Spanish had that seed of doubt planted in from the very first game, which had never quite got over. And as Holland have won game after game after game, and they were doing so before the World Cup as well. I just wonder whether that Spanish, they start questioning themselves pretty much from the start of the tournament and they've never quite got over it.
Well, we've talked about Holland, but what about the Spanish view?
Hello!
Sid Lowe!
Hello, James, how are you?
I'm very well, Sid. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks, yeah.
Where are you, Sid?
I'm back in Madrid.
Oh. What are you wearing?
What am I wearing? I'm wearing a pair of shorts and a T-shirt. It's not particularly exciting. However, I did walk out my front door this morning to see an absolutely colossal Spain flag hung across the street. So I think that tells you what people around here are thinking right now.
Right. They're thinking about the World Cup final, Sid.
Yeah, if I look out the window now, I can see it. It's big. This is a big old flag.
Right. Okay. Is there a lot of flag hanging in the Spanish capital?
Not anywhere near as much as is my understanding is the case in England. Although it's been a while since I've seen a World Cup in England, but not as much. But certainly it's quite significant because it's something that I think probably 5 or 6 years ago wouldn't have happened at all.
Right.
And there are certainly some around. There's quite a few of the little flags on cars. There's one or two balconies that you see, and certainly if you're outside a really gigantic block of flats, of which there's a lot in Spain, you'll see. I would guess maybe one in every 7 or 8 balconies might have a Spain flag on it.
All right, okay. As long as that block of flats wasn't in, say, Barcelona?
Well, that's where I've just come from. And I was quite struck after the semi-final, because I was in Barcelona after the semi-final, walked back after work, and there were quite a few people out and cheering and celebrating, a few people on motorbikes, people hanging out of car windows and stuff and beeping and tooting, but relatively low key, I think, compared to the rest of Spain. But certainly this has been a success that some Catalan fans have been prepared to identify with, not least, of course, because of the sheer number of Catalan and Barcelona players who are involved in the Spain team.
Well, it's largely their team by proxy. They more or less lent their team to Spain for the duration.
That's exactly what the Catalan media are saying, as you can imagine, because they're screamingly biased at the best of times, but they've been making a big point, Sport and Deportiva, who are the two big Catalan newspapers, of saying this is basically Barcelona's triumph. It's Barcelona's model. It's Barcelona's players. Of course, they described David Villa as already feeling the Barcelona effect. And I'm thinking, what? Because he didn't score goals before. But there you go. Apparently, that's because he's gone to Barcelona that he's now suddenly a good player, which actually tells you everything about the way that players are rated in Spain. You go to Barcelona and suddenly people are allowed to take you seriously.
What about Marca? Apart from Ronaldo's painted toenails, what are they saying about the whole thing?
Ronaldo's painted toenails was brilliant. Well, what they're saying is...
Why did he paint... Actually, no, that's more interesting. What Ronaldo's painted toenails, they're black, for anyone who hasn't seen them. What does that mean? Jacob, you're young. What does that mean?
If you've got black toenails, it means you've got gangrene, doesn't it? Like that. Or frostbite or something. I don't know what it means. I just think it's absolutely surreal that yet again Marca take Cristiano Ronaldo doing something that's nothing to do with football and take this as another sign that he's wonderful, because rather than saying Cristiano Ronaldo paints his toenails, what a weirdo, which is the way I would have obviously headlined something like that, they say Cristiano Ronaldo paints his toenails always at the cutting edge of fashion. I just thought, Christ almighty, is this really what we've come to? And of course, being Marca, the answer is yes, most definitely it's what we've come to.
All right. But in other news,
about the game, should we talk about what really matters?
Yeah.
They're obviously very, very excited. There's a real sense of this being a historic moment. But I think one thing that is significant is that I think the emotional and psychological state going into this game is very different to the semi-final. The semi-final was nervousness, it was fear, it was what if it goes wrong. I think this time, very few people really believe that Holland can beat Spain. And not only that, I think there's now a collective sense that Spain have done the hard bit, which is beating Germany. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that this is what people are thinking, but I wonder subconsciously there's an element of thinking, even if we lost the final, this has still been a great World Cup. Spain has still proven that they are maybe the best side in the world. And certainly if you take this collectively with the last European Championships, I think over the last 3 years, you would have to say that Spain are probably the best international side there is. And I just think everybody seems to me, at least, and this can maybe be a bit impressionistic, but it seems to me that everyone's much, much more relaxed about the final than they were about the semi-final.
Well, maybe they don't fear Holland as much as they do Germany. Well,
that's the bottom line. There's also the fact that this is, as I say, almost a game of they've reached a destiny now, which is the final. Anything that happens, obviously they want to win it. Of course they do, but it's not quite as big. There wouldn't be a sense of failure now if they were to lose this final. I think if they'd lost in the semi-final, there might have been. I think there's also the fact that they're feeling now is conditioned by what happened in the semi-final. There's a very clear sense in Spain that the victory against Germany was by far their best performance so far. So that, of course, helps to alter the thinking going into the subsequent game. In this case, that subsequent game being the final itself.
Sid, can I ask, that's something that would be quite easy for the Spanish to say now that they've got this far, and a loss would be a brave failure and things. But then they wouldn't be they wouldn't be up there with say the French side, who really defined their era around 2000 and 98, and it would be quite similar to maybe the Hungarians in 54, even a really very good side who just didn't quite realise their potential when push came to shove.
Yeah, but I think what the Spanish believe is that. Let's not get me wrong in the sense that Spain want to win this World Cup, and it would be a disappointment if they didn't win it, but it wouldn't be a failure. I think that you have to bear in mind that Spain came into this in a situation in which they'd never been past a quarterfinal World Cup before. Yes, they finished fourth in 1950, but that wasn't semi-finals. So they'd never got to a semi-final before. So they'd already laid that ghost to rest. Adding to that the way they played in the European Championship, also the Spanish obsession with the style in which they play. And I think they feel there's almost a kind of moral high ground thing going on. They feel that they've taught the rest of the world a way of playing football, a lesson in football, almost a kind of a moral imperative in the way they approach the game. So
I don't think they see it as being a kind of a great opportunity missed if they don't win the World Cup final. Of course, it would be, so much as the fact that they're there is an indication of the fact that they are a genuinely good side, that what they do aesthetically can also be very, very effective. And I suppose I would argue, whether the Spanish would argue this, I don't know, because I've not heard any of them be confronted with this particular question. I would argue that the France side that won the 98 World Cup wasn't actually that good.
Sid, I've got two names which should strike fear into Spanish hearts as they approach this final. One is Mark Van Bommel. The other is a bloke called Howard Webb.
And both of them do strike fear into Spanish hearts. And I would argue as well, James, and certainly the Spaniards would argue this, and this is why I would argue it, that put together, those two strike even more fear into Spanish hearts. And the reason is that Mark Van Bommel, as I think everybody has seen, the Spanish believe is basically an assassin. And Howard Webb, the Spanish believe, is the assassin's accomplice. He is the guy that allows a dirty bastard like Mark Van Bommel, which is exactly the way the Spanish see him, to do what he does. They believe that Howard Webb is too permissive a referee. They believe he allows players to be too aggressive, too dirty, too hard on the pitch. And I think what that does, actually, by the way, is pose a whole question about the concepts of football, the way that you know, different countries approach the game. And I think this is something that causes Spanish football teams problems sometimes in the Champions League. They believe that every contact will be a foul, and they don't always get it. They believe that Howard Webb is possibly the worst example of that. And those two together, yeah, that does concern them. The second that Howard Webb was named as the referee for the final, I immediately thought, this is great. The Spanish are going to go bonkers. This could be quite entertaining. Within 20 minutes of his being named, both Marca and AS, the two main sports dailies in Madrid, had already put on their website, Howard Webb, the referee that gravely damaged us in the game against Switzerland, will be the referee of the World Cup final. Now, they believe that against Switzerland, there were two penalties turned down that there should have been a red card for. I can't remember who it was now, but who fouled Andres Iniesta when he was running through on goal. And they believe that the Switzerland goal was offside, which of course ignores the fact that it would otherwise have been a penalty and possibly a red card against Iker Casillas. But yeah, they're not happy at all about this. The one kind of proviso to that, or maybe even a caveat, would be that they're not very happy.
That's our first caveat. Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding. Woof, woof, hang on a minute, rubbish, etc. The caveat to that is that I think that, generally speaking, the Spanish don't like any referees, and they've almost consistently, I say the Spanish, maybe that's a bit unfair, areas of the Spanish media have almost consistently complained about the referees throughout the tournament.
Sid,
even though I would argue that one or two key decisions have gone their way.
Sid, counsel for the prosecution calls to the witness stand, Jacob Steinberg.
Sid, do you remember the Barcelona-Bayern Munich game two seasons ago?
Vaguely, yes, yeah, I do. Yeah.
And you know when Messi was put through Omri, and Omri scored, and Messi was flattened by Van Bommel. By an elbow to the head. You know who the referee was?
Presumably Howard Webb.
Yeah.
There you go. But as I say, there's a conceptual thing here. The Spanish believe, generally speaking, the Spanish have a series of kind of cliched conceptions about other countries' football, in the same way that the English do, of course. And they believe, for example, that Italian football is cynical and dirty, that English football is noble but very dirty, and that too much contact is allowed. And they believe more or less the same thing about the Germans for the most part. So you put those two things together, a player who plays for Bayern Munich and a referee who allows physical contact, and it's something that doesn't go down well with the Spanish, who generally do believe that football is closer to a non-contact sport than the English do. You know, in England, if someone absolutely creams a striker, we think it's a great tackle. In Spain, they think it's an assassination attempt.
Tom Lutz.
Yes, I've got a question for Sid. Spain seem to be the overwhelming favourites here. So how do you think Holland can beat them tomorrow?
Ooh. Iron Robin is the short answer to that. Someone with pace who can run at Spain. And then again, I would say, and here I follow to some extent, or more to the point, agree with what Jonathan Wilson says, and that is that Spain are a side that are not necessarily desperately worried about scoring goals so much as controlling the game. If Spain get the first goal and don't have the anxiety that is imposed by needing to score, then I think Holland are sunk. I mean, obviously, all sorts of things happen in football, and who knows, but if logic is followed and Spain get the first goal, then I think it may be over for Holland. I think Holland will need to be quite direct. I think they'll need to be very aggressive, and I think they'll need to put pressure on Spain. It was interesting reading a really brilliant interview by El País with Xavi Hernández a couple of days ago, And he was talking about, he couldn't understand why people in Spain were saying Spain hadn't been that good, because some people in Spain were. Why haven't we scored three goals? And he was saying, are you stupid? We're European champions. Teams aren't dumb. They see us and they come to us and they're aggressive and they hunt us down like wolves and we don't have a second on the ball. Well, against Germany, and there's some really interesting video evidence that you can put the two games side by side, Portugal and Paraguay as against Germany. Portugal and Paraguay are much more intense in their pressure, and Spain found it much harder to get their game going, although they still dominated possession. Germany sat back and allowed Spain to play, and of course that denied Spain some space, but it did mean that their central midfielders could play the ball a bit more. I think if Holland have seen those three examples, they will be very, very aggressive. And of course, the fact they've got Mark Bommel in the side suggests they will also be very aggressive. And I think that would be one thing they should at least in theory try and do.
All right, Sid. Listen, Kevin McCarra in his preview on The Guardian says it's a sensible assumption that Spain will prevail in the end, but after playing within themselves for much of the time, they now ought to be taken to the limit. A World Cup final deserves no less. I think that pretty much sums it up. They are a brilliant football team, but it would be nice to see somebody really, really push them. Do you think that's going to happen?
There is a slight sense of us being waiting for a classic game from the Spanish. But then the nature of the way Spain plays, they don't want a classic game, because a classic game, at least in the way that we understand it, is end-to-end, two teams attacking, loads of chances. Spain are a side that, because of their fantastic possession of the ball, don't want a classic game. They want to control the game, completely nullify the other side, almost anaesthetise the other side. And I think that's what they'll be looking for. So they don't care if they win the World Cup. Of course they don't. But I think there's an element of truth in that Spain would like a game where the rest of the world says, bloody hell, you really are good.
Mm. All right then. Well, here's to that. The final is Sunday night at Soccer City. Sid, many thanks for your contribution this evening. And if we can get hold of you after the final, one way or the other, to get your reaction, that'd be terrific.
Yeah, that's no problem at all. I'll be watching it in Madrid, so feel free to ring me whenever suits.
Super. And indeed, duper. That, in the meantime, brings us to the end of today's World Cup Daily. Many thanks to producer Ben, to Jacob Steinberg, Tom Lutz, and Scott Murray, and you, of course, listener. We'll be back in 24 hours' time. Make sure you join us for that. For now, from all of us, here it is. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.